BRS meeting, July 18th, 2016.
Mary Kay McMahon, Washington, D.C. I'm not sure why it's so bad.
Hi, this is Will Schell from Prince George's County.
I'm Suzanne Campbell from Arlington, Virginia.
I'm Paul Simpoy. I am from Eaton, Capitol Heights, Maryland, Metro Access Subcommittee Chair. It's 9 o'clock, the 5 o'clock meeting.
Steve Kappa, from Northwest Washington, D.C.
Thank you. It's not on my agenda, but I think we need to approve the minutes for the last meeting. Has everybody had a chance to read it?
All right.
Any comments on the minutes or?
I will be approving the minutes.
I second it.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, like sign? Staying? Minutes are approved. We're ready to roll. Do we have our guest speaker here?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Does anybody have anything they need to add to the agenda? Or are we happy with the agenda? You have nothing? Ah, Filippo.
I just wanted to know when would we discuss that to parent change and transport these meetings? Would that be this meeting or the next meeting?
Well, I'm going to try to finish this meeting a little early so that Paul will have more time for Metro Access. So it will be at the end of this, it will be at the end of this meeting.
Would that fall in possibly my meeting, Mr. Blake?
It's your agenda, so if you want to make that your agenda for tonight, that's fine.
No, that's right. We already moved off the buildings right today, AC last week.
And I hear, somebody's got something to say tonight, Filippo said this. We can talk about it. Yeah, we'll be listening to our meeting, so I'm happy to have it turned into the MAC meeting. So we start doing that and we can keep it as planned at this point. You're right.
Yes.
So real quick, though, before we go to our guests, if you don't mind, let me just give you kind of a brief from Buzzman Report, because this was one of the issues which raised separately, but also brought, you brought up in the last meeting. And I said we wouldn't talk about this. In fact, we're going to have a demonstration, but once you hear from our guests, I think you'll see that we're well on our way to resolving that issue, if not having it completely resolved. So we'll save that. Breanne sent me a concern from one of her constituents, I would say, for lack of a better word, friends, a coworker or someone, who felt that they were the target of a Metro staff member because of their disability. There was an offload taking place at the Pentagon Station. And while other customers were not quick to react, the station platform attendant, as I've been calling them, you've seen men and women in blue vests standing on our platforms to try to help customers out. Customers stated that they were directly targeted, and we've been trying to follow up. This was just really a brief response to Breanne. We've been trying to follow up. We're looking at videotape. I haven't been able to identify the customer or the situation, so I'm going to reach out to the customer personally. I haven't heard any more complaints. I think that's a good thing. But we're working on that. We're still following up on platform light throughout the system. Pentagon Station lights were fixed, then they kind of went out again. They're fixed again. So we're just going to have to keep an eye on that. And we talked a lot about SafeTrack last week in the context of safety. Just want to know that SafeTrack is intended to improve everybody's safety while also improving the reliability of the system overall. One of the things that I think we're just asking everyone, not just customers with disabilities, but the entire region, to be patient in this process. The general manager is taking a bold step in making this happen. It's to reflect work that needed to be done over the course of many years, and now we're trying to accelerate that work within 1 year, but that does mean sacrifice, but that does mean inconvenience. So when we talk about SafeTrack, we can talk about it in the context of safety. There's nothing wrong with that, but I didn't want to mixed issues last week, but I did want to say that the whole point of Safe Track is to bring about a safer and more reliable system, so that will require some inconvenience and some sacrifice at various points of the system over the course of this coming year.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that very good communication with Safe Track until this week. They're going to move back to the next stage of Safe Track on Wednesday, and they don't have anything up on the website yet about Wednesday. They're still talking about the current Safe Track with Reagan National Airport. And so the poor people that have suffered on the Orange and Silver Line previously have had a request that they're about to get hit again. But they don't know it, and they won't know it until Wednesday because they haven't posted it.
I'll check on that as this meeting continues.
One thing before we have our guests come in, do we have anyone in the audience that has come for public comment for Metro Access? We're going to have that. We're okay. Is anybody here for that?
No.
Okay, so we're all set. Yeah. So let's invite our guests to come up and talk to us.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Phil Wallace. I'm the managing director responsible for the Bus Maintenance and Bus Engineering Group here at the Lodge. By my side here is Mr. John Collins. He's our project manager from Clever Devices Corporation. They are the manufacturer of our voice enunciator systems. And they're also under contract to do any maintenance and overall management of the Clever Devices voice enunciator system, as well as all the other onboard equipment that Clever Devices systems do for the authority. Now, just in a way, I give you a little feedback as of today, where we're at in this little history of voice enunciators. The Metro bus fleet, we're the sixth largest heavy-duty transit bus fleet in the United States. As of today, we have 1,583 buses in our fleet. That's inclusive of 61 buses that we pressed into service to support the Safe Track program right now, to support the shuttles and the augmenting of our line service. All of our buses, as you know, are ADA compliant with wheelchair ramps or lifts. We actually have 96 buses left and hope to have all of those buses out of service with lifts by the end of the year, out of active service anyway. We're in the process of taking delivery of 295 new buses being delivered to us as we speak. As of this morning, we have 198 of those in service, and the remainder of those 295 will be placed in service by the end of the year. They're manufactured by the New Flyer Corporation. They also have the latest and greatest Clever Devices systems on board. Just in the way of history, I think we were one of the first large transit properties to introduce automated voice enunciator systems in 1997. We actually went out with a solicitation. There were three vendors that we tested and evaluated their systems. Clever Devices was the only one that actually successfully passed the test. And that began the history of our relationship with Clever Devices over the years. Yes, sir.
If I can ask you a question about the new buses coming in, it's one of the major issues that we've dealt with has been wheelchair accessibility on the old buses and accessibility to the wheelchair parking spaces at the front of the flip seats and the ability of the larger vehicles like Melissa's to actually get on, turn around, and get back off again. And we had pointed out the current buses that are used in the circulator system are wonderful. Because they've got their flip seats are 2, 3, 4 pairs so that they can flip up and they do give you access to get by, and the aisles are wider as you come on. And I wonder, since we have new buses coming on board, whether they will have that sort of configuration, because it is a real problem for people in the newer mobility devices to use the older buses.
Well, the current 295 that we're taking delivery of now aren't the same. But before we give a notice to proceed for the final 100, we can surely take a look at that.
Right.
Because we're involved in the DC circulator specification as well.
Well, that would be super. Because, again, we found that those are just much more friendly to the larger mobility vehicles to get around. Also, with the seats being together, it's easier to get someone to get off of it so we can share it.
We'll definitely take a look at that before we award it in the next 100 buses.
Thank you.
So again, we've done had a history with the Clever Devices and voice enunciators since 1997. As the equipment became older and older, we saw a need in 2010
to entertain a contract to refurbish all the onboard equipment. Because over that period of time, we had Generation 1, Generation 2, Generation 3. So we introduced a contract to have Quaker Devices come in and standardize the onboard equipment, upgrade it to the latest technology, and give us some additional capacity. At that time, when we did that, and we completed that in early 2014, at that time, our exterior speaker volume was at 77 decibels on average. 77 decibels, that was what we agreed to, and that's what we confirmed with all the older buses in the fleet. With the introduction of these new 295 buses, which we started taking delivery of in November, January timeframe last year and earlier this year, we introduced a new version 4, which was backward compatible, but unbeknownst to us, it had some uniquenesses in the volume control. So we went along with our normal process, pushing out what we thought was 77 decibel, where in fact it was actually upwards of 92 decibel. So we had to go through an iteration to figure out what's going on here. We thought we had it tackled and we pushed out a new software, but unfortunately it didn't take. We bounced back up to where we were seeing 92 decibel. And we worked with Quaker Devices very carefully, and we've gone out and they have actually physically touched all of the new buses and also electronically validated that the systems are set on an average at 77 decibels. So we're pretty comfortable sitting here today that the 1,583 buses in our fleet are at the 77 decibels. Keeping in mind that's an average, all the buses have a ambient sensor, so that if you're in a construction zone or there's a lot of noise, it automatically causes the volume to raise slightly. It also is configurable so that any bus that goes in service after 7 p.m. in the evenings, the enunciator automatically drops down to 7 decibels as well. So we think, as of today, we're where we need to be with 77 decibels. It's where the rest of the fleet is at and will be consistent. As always, and I think I offered it, it's been quite a while since I had the pleasure of visiting with you all, but I think the last time we talked about voice enunciator system, we offered it up to you. If we'd like to get some number of you to come and we'll bring a bus down and we'll show you how the system works, and if we need to make any adjustments, we're more than willing to do so. So that offer is to you, but we think as of today, the 77 decibel setting is on the whole fleet.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Charlie?
Here, I'll try it.
60 decibels.
Hey, you offered to have us review the equipment on the buses. How would we arrange that? That sounds like a good idea.
Through this committee, you just let me know who and the time, and we'll make arrangements with our engineering and Quaker Devices to make that happen.
Okay.
By the way, you're not really a rich Sox. But we'll still do a big thing to the conversation.
It's okay, it's a different league. See?
Yeah. Are we going to be talking afterwards about external announcements? Because I have a comment on external announcements, but I can hold it if that's coming up.
Actually, we were going to bring a bus down and we were told not to for this exercise, so. But if there's something specific as it relates to external announcements,
yeah.
Well, I thought, well, let me just be clear that maybe I'm confused. So the issue of coordinating the bus down here, we can do that. We can take care of it. This meeting didn't allow for that time again because we weren't going to have the whole 2 hours. That's one reason we didn't do it again. But the other reason, now just to be clear, and Mr. Wallace, what you were just talking about were in fact the external announcements.
Yes, correct.
Yes. So this is your question that you raised, Steve.
Yes.
You should raise them now. Because
yes.
What we're saying is it was a problem. We heard the community in there because there was a change, and we believe we have fixed the problem. But if you have some more concerns, what you raised.
I had trouble understanding. I think that maybe it was the mic.
So
how could I just ask maybe just one or two sentences? How did you say you're going to be remedying the issue or dealing with the issue?
We have actually reprogrammed the fleet to the 77 decibel average reading as opposed to the 92 decibel
that it was
on the newer buses.
All right. I have I have an issue, and other people have an issue with just the essence of what you've done in the past couple of months with respect to these external announcements. And my issue was personal, and so I wrote a personal letter, in customer service, because if it doesn't affect accessibility, it's not a conversation issue. It became an accessibility issue when I was on a bus, I think it was a 42 bus, and a person who was in a wheelchair and sitting in the front asked a person across the way, asked the driver, I'm sitting there too, to turn off the announcement relating to the fares, because she said she knows the fares. And the bus driver, of course, says, it's programmed, it's not under my control. I saw that again, and a person putting earplugs in their ears who were sitting towards the front, because, there are people who don't have the flexibility to move all the way to the rear. They're sitting in the front. Based upon these two things, I raised it as something to discuss. Here are my, very quickly, this base fare announcement, whatever the decibel level is, and I can give you a copy of this if it helps, it's unnecessary. We should not be adding additional disruption from riders' conversations, from riders' relaxation, from riders' reading, and from riders just concentrating on a pleasant and relaxing ride unless it's absolutely necessary. Who is this for? The base fare is $1.75 for this bus. It's not for people who have Metro cards. They know what the base fare is. It's not for people who are residents who pay cash. They know what the base fare is very well. It's the tourists who don't have Metro cards. That's the only group that possibly benefits from that. Tourists having Metro cards. The others know what the base fare is. The problem also is tourists having Metro, not having Metro cards, they're confused by that. It's actually slowing down the service. I work a block from the mall, and I use a bunch of buses during the day. It's slowing down the service because the tourists hear that, and they confuse base fare with the fares that the Metro uses. And they wind up having a discussion with the bus driver on where they're going, how much is the fare for me, because of that word base fare, and because of on this bus. So two issues. First, it's unnecessary and it's destructive. And second, it's actually, I know it had good intentions, but it's actually slowing down the process of boarding. It's only been in effect, I think, for a couple of months. I strongly urge that, I know you've toned down the decibel level, thank you, but I strongly urge, it's a good idea, but it's actually having a negative effect. And the people sitting in cafes and restaurants, regardless of that decibel level, hear this thing. And if you're at 18th and Columbia, where there are five buses stopping, and you're sitting in the restaurant across the way, you hear that announcement clearly every 2 minutes. So I suggest you reconsider for those reasons. It was a good intention, but it's not helping anybody, it's actually hindering. The second is the doors opening, doors closing. I don't know of anybody who's ever fallen out of a bus rear door to need to have that. And I don't know anybody who's forgotten the doors are going to be opening for them to be reminded. The people who could benefit from that announcement don't use the rear door, they use the front door. So again, this is additional noise. Good intentions, but what you're getting is bus riders listening to this. In fact, if you listen from the front and you listen from the back and you happen to be sitting in the middle, it's like stereo. So I suggest maybe you go out and take a ride on some of these and hear for yourself. I suggest both of these be eliminated. They're causing more problems than they're benefiting. The other thing you might consider is getting rid of the M on the next arrival information. I don't know whether that's part of the technology that you deal with. People in the city don't think M. And I know the reason, because we've got three states we're dealing with. But if you're in the district, and there are just a few duplications, why have people go through the mental process when they don't have to? Put the V or the M in Maryland and Virginia, and just take out, program to take out the N's here. They're not necessary, and it's one more thing that the riding public has to think about when they're reading those signs. And the last thing is to consider speeding them up. I know you're trying to work with the lowest common denominator in keeping the flow, but I'm just afraid that some of those stops, such as Asparagus Square, it may take up to 45 seconds to see all the buses at the current speed. So you might want to take a look at that. And I'm sorry.
No,
I've said enough for the whole year right now, but...
That was fine. I'd like to make one addition to what you said about the exit notices and the entrance notices and the doors. What would be very useful is telling people not to exit or enter before the buses won't yield. I have seen too many people fall as they're trying to get on and get off because the bus is moving up or down. Because, again, a lot of people that don't drive on a regular basis don't realize that buses kneel 80% of the time. It depends on the driver, but it would be good to remind people not to try to step on while the bus is on the way down.
Yeah. No, maybe that kind of announcement might be more useful than just telling people that as you're sitting in front of you, the doors are open.
No, that's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, could we move the suspension to another point? Because we go on a long time about it, and we're chewing up time.
Well, no, it's on the agenda, actually. Sure.
But, yeah, I
but you're welcome,
sir. Sure.
But I hear you loud and clear. We will take these back to the appropriate organization and the authority. Just for clarification, the announcement of the fair. You get a lot of reasons why we might have used it, but the reason we use it is operator assaults. Up until March, our operators were required by policy to announce the base fare to the patrons of the bus. Operator assaults is a big, big issue that we're up against in this region, and in the industry, not just in the region.
And a little sign on the bus says the New York City system, the Chicago system, and the Los Angeles system have is not appropriate for white women.
We actually have that badge on our buses as well, sir. It's on there. We're trying all the things we can do to protect our operators. That was one of them. But we'll take that back to the safety team as we wait on the doors. The door incidents not only here in Vermont, but in the industry are a major safety issue. People fall out of doors all the time. Fortunately, because of all the bells and whistles we've got on here, we don't have rear door incidents for the most part. And that's why they're on there. We've got overrides and protections. Sometimes people construe it as overkill, but there's a lot of folks in the transit industry that get injured out of rear doors.
Thank you. Any more discussion about the announcements before we move on to Shirley? So you have an announcement discussion.
Well, my comment is more so when we deal with issues like this, we should look at the cross-disability implications of whatever standard we develop. And so what may be noise to one person is information to another. And so not that I discount what you're saying, I just get concerned that things that we may need, we don't see, will not be there anymore. So that needs to be considered.
Thank you. That was brief and to the point. Any other questions about the announcements or discussion? Thank our guests for coming.
Could I make one suggestion for consideration? We don't want another sound announcement, but if you placed on the little on the digital board, please exit from rear. Not an announcement, no more announcements, but if you could flash that, that might help people in making the decision to use the front or the rear, and that would speed up the bus movement. Again, please, not another announcement, but you know, just you know what I mean, where it is. Not please move to the rear, please exit from the rear.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. We'll see you in the future.
Okay, we've finished the printed agenda. I'd like to take a minute or two, since we know our first and second vice chairs have retired from the EAC, and so right now Bushrail has a chair. And typically, at this time of the year, we usually do try to pick chairs, first and second vice chairs. Throw it out to the group as to who might be interested in being considered by the full AAC for one of those two positions. And it should be somebody that comes to the meetings, it should be somebody that rides the bus. The reason we have two vice chairs is that one of them takes care of the bus, one of them takes care of the rail. And we do have crossover because some of us use both. But if there's an interest in serving,
I didn't hear. Would you just repeat what you're looking for? What we're talking about?
What we're talking about replacing our missing first and second vice chairs of the bus rail subcommittee, and asking who might be interested in serving in one of those positions.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may say tonight. Instead of necessarily putting the members on the spot, if you will, why don't we throw it out like you did? We have a month to think about it because there will be no meetings in August, mm-hmm. and then come back September, perhaps have, I don't want to call it an election, but more like a selection of those who would volunteer themselves to serve.
Well, that was what I was doing, is have people think about it, and I would recommend putting together the reasons that you would like to do that and what your skills are to be used in doing that. And then when we meet again as a full AAC, we can ask people to come forward to volunteer to serve in that position. Bus Rail has never really had a first and second vice chair, as I said. It's two vice chairs. There's more bus than one, there's more rail, but it's been pretty equal. So think about listening, why you want to do it, why you'd be good at it. Yes?
I can't remember if this is in the bylaws, what the responsibilities of the vice chairs are.
Well, the major responsibilities of the vice chairs are to chair the meeting if the chair is not present. And then typically when we have a working group set up by Bus Rail, one of the vice chairs volunteers to either be on it or to chair it. In addition to that, we've not been very successful, but we've tried to get a tradition of all of the leadership group for the AAC, as well as Bus Rail, as well as Metro Access, to pay attention to what's going on at the various board meetings. Now, that's getting easier, because the board has decided they have too many meetings. And so there are fewer meetings that they're doing. So again, with the schedule that may be put together by Patrick, it might be to attend, and when I say attend, either physically attend the board meeting or to attend it by listening to it at your leisure. Because you can listen to it live. They're all broadcast live, and then they're all on a website for offline, which is like Spreaker. It is there. So, in the best of all possible worlds, I would love to see the vice chairs go beyond just being available in the chair of meeting, but also put in time on the workers. Because if you're vice chair, you obviously should know more about what your vice chair because of experience in writing. So I may have over described it. Do we have someone from the audience? Oh, does Barbara want to talk to us now? Barbara, I just got a note. I know you're here. Would you like to talk to us about lighting? Come on up and use our microphones. Barbara is single-handedly the woman of light in the metro system. If things were so bad in Paris, she might go to the city of light right now.
Well, hi there. B has asked me to just give a brief update about what's been going on with the lighting work group as well as the National Capital Citizens with Location Involvement in the Lighting Project. And we, in May, we were fortunate enough to secure a meeting with the new general manager, Paul Wietveld. And we had this tension for about 50 minutes, and it was really great to hear his commitment to the lighting project as well as other disability-related projects within the bus and rail. And he was very attentive. I brought a report with me, and he was very interested in it. He had read it, all 40 pages of it, and he had lots of questions. And so came away from the meeting feeling that while the Metro might be in a little bit of interesting situation at the moment, it's in very good hands if this is any indication of how he runs his day-to-day shop. We did express our concern with the lighting throughout the rail system, and it turned out that his daughter actually had a retina detachment at one point, and so he was very sensitive to the needs of the partially sighted community. So we also were very fortunate enough to attend the lighting demonstration, which was held in the wee hours this past Friday morning at McPherson Square, and that was to work on the wall lighting as well as the track bed lighting, which is a little bit dim for people with partial sight, but certainly improvement can be appreciated by everyone in the ridership. And that was very interesting, an education for me. I was able to see firsthand what actually happens when the rail system closes down at midnight, and a lot of actual little traffic going through there, and so we had to wait a couple of hours before we actually got to begin, and for me to observe setting up the proposed wall lighting and again the track bed lighting. So that does kind of slow down things, and I'm totally in favor of doing things like the surges that Paul Wietveld has started, as well as closing down earlier those couple of hours on the weekend evenings. So what happened with the lighting was it's currently fluorescent lighting, those long tubes that you see if you look straight up here. And what is proposed is the LED lighting, and that's pretty much, if it is approved, it's bringing us to the next century, so to speak. What's currently in there has been what's in there for, I guess, 40, 45 years. And so a lot has happened since those fluorescent tubes. And this new proposed lighting would give us about double the illumination in terms of foot candles. So that's a really, really good thing. It's a much warmer light and not so harsh on your eyes. And also the lighting team is very detail oriented, and we're trying to have even lighting so that when you walk, you don't have a dark spot and then a light spot. That because that's very hard for everyone's eyes to adjust to. Similar when you go from a bright lobby at the theater to the inside of the theater, which is very, very dark. So anyway, lots been happening on that front, and we're really, really grateful. We're hoping that the AAC can also approve of the good work that this lighting and power team within WMATA has been doing. And so I do have a photograph of it. If you would like to see more or less a picture of three sections at McPherson Square, a lighting demo. The first one would be the new lighting, the second one would be no lighting, the third lighting would be the current lighting. And you can see, if you look at it, that it's quite an improvement. And again, natural is to be commended. Are there any questions?
Yeah, Barbara, I have one. We had brought up the traffic lighting at the AAC, because something that I had noticed on the orange silver blue line is with those fluorescent tubes, there are entire segments with no light. And I know that was one of their priorities for this year, and the question is if they're getting ready to switch over to a different type of lighting, the LED lighting, are they going to continue to replace lights that are out until they get the new ones installed, or are we going to have dark areas? If you go into Virginia Square, and I'll pick that as one, the entire back of the train, as you're going towards McCarrollton, there's entire segments of no track light at all. The lights are all out. The other thing,
so before you go to the session, when you say no track light, you're talking about the track bed or the platform?
On the track bed.
Okay.
The fluorescent tubes that Barbara was talking about, they're completely out. On the second thing, when it comes to the wall lighting, on places like Ross Lynn that have had fires, the wall signage is smoked over in gray. And that's not a lighting issue, but you can't read it. And so, again, they may have to just hose down the walls to get that off, but there are a number of the stations on the orange, blue, silver line where they've had smoke and fires and problems, that the walls suddenly are really kind of dark and smoky and hazy and difficult to see. My last one is at Virginia Square, Arlington has put a street light in at the top of the escalator as you leave. And it's a brilliant, beautiful, flaming, bright light. And as you're coming up the escalator, if you're actually looking up, going ahead, it's blinding. And so, along with your point about having a constant level of light, not bright or short. And I'm familiar with that because that's my home station. But I'm sure there are other districts that have improved the lighting around the station for safety reasons, which I think is great. But they haven't talked to the lighting group about adjusting it so that it doesn't put glare in your eyes as you're coming up the escalator. So I sound like Steve, I'm not too long. That's right.
Those are all very good, valid points, Phil, and a lot of them did come up in our discussion. I did mention that those track bed lighting that a lot of people with low vision are sensitive to excessively bright lights, such as doors. I know she's mentioned a lot here. And so I was very concerned that, you know, representing the whole population, that we need to address that sooner rather than later. And they did say, yep, they were aware of that. And it's also an issue for the train conductors. They need to have that really glare free, so that's at top of mind, and I will be sure to communicate that again, with them. And also, in terms of the track bed lighting, I cannot comment about the fires. That's a separate issue. A lot of the issues that were brought up were certainly not in the power area's issue to correct, so we need to direct those to the appropriate department in Metro. Fires, I think, would be just to replace that whole sign. We did notice that with the new lighting, it's proposed, it's not guaranteed that it's going to happen, although we sure hope it does. There is a high correlation between the ability to see the signs and the illumination level. With this new lighting, it does make it a lot easier to see the signs. So we think that will help with that as well. I'm sorry, I'm jumping all around here, but getting back to the track bed area, they do space the lighting. If they don't have enough time or funds, they will skip some lighting fixtures and just replace like every fourth one or something like that. And part of the reason for that is that it's so difficult to get track time. This, you know, Metro stations is on the weekdays, closed, as many of you know, closed at 12 midnight, opens at 5. So they really don't have much time to do that work. And I saw it for myself, how much time it does take to go in there and replace everything. And so that's probably a very good reason for that, although it's simply a guess right now, my point. So, yeah, I mean, they're very detail-oriented. A lot of the questions that I asked, they already were aware of them, and that's very comforting to me, although we do need to keep making them aware of our instructional needs.
Sure. Yes, thank you. I've had the distinct pleasure of knowing Barbara for almost 20 years now, and I just want to say that people with low vision, 90% of legally blind people have some vision. And many of the folks that I know have always complained that the measure is just too darn dark. And so what you've been doing, Barbara, is next to miraculous.
Thank you, Charlie.
Any other questions? I have one more. When you go to LED, when they put the LED in the garages, what they did, which I think is brilliant, is they contracted with Philips. So that Philips is handling the LED lights, they're responsible for maintaining the LED lights and taking care of it rather than Umaga buying bulbs and putting in fixtures themselves. So did they mention whether they were going to do it as a subcontractor or whether they're going to try and do it in-house?
I don't know. I did get confirmation that they are swapping the whole bunch out, as is industry practice. Say for example, you got two light bulbs out at Metro Center. When those two lights are out, they don't just come in and replace those two. They will set a time frame, like say in Metro's case, it's every 6 months, every 8 months, or every 10 months. But they will go at a set time, they will replace every single light bulb in that station. Because they have to go and get a ladder and, you know, climb up on there and do all these gymnastics things to replace these very difficult to get to light bulbs, they're not going to do it just for a couple. So it's really cost effective for them to replace all of them. So it does happen, as I said, every 6, 8, or 10 months. And I assume that they're going to continue doing that. What happens in the LED lights is when they put them in, it's at a very high level of illumination, and then slowly it goes down, and then it kind of flattens out. And thereafter, for the life of the bulb, it's at that lower level of illumination. So, that you might have noticed that when you're kind of waiting for a training, you know, see all the light bulbs are burning nicely, but they're not really how they were several months ago. Another thing that was brought up was very interesting is when I looked down, I saw some dirt and debris of unidentified source on the boats. And I'm like, well, what can we do with that? That's obviously impeding the light from coming through. And they're like, well, you know, years ago, we did go through and clear off that debris, but for some reason they don't do it any longer. And if they were to clean that off, the illumination levels would be double. So that's really remarkable and something that needs to be discussed. With these new LED bulbs, they're encased, and so they can actually take a hose, water hose, and flush all that out pretty quickly. And so that's another benefit of the LED lamps. The LED lamps, I'm also told, will not be to be replaced for 10 years. So that's essentially eliminating a challenge that the lighting work group within the AAC has brought to the AAC's attention, because, you know, again, these, especially on the stairs and above the escalators, the work crews cannot get to those and replace those bulbs easily. So it's all good, really, the LED. So we skipped a lot of these other lighting things, like the other fluorescents and the halogens, which are very hot, and these are very cool bulbs.
Great, thank you, Roger. That's okay. What I'd like to do now is we're early, and there's a desire for discussion of things we've been doing by email on XSDC and what's coming up in Maryland. And if Paul would like to take it, I'm delighted to end our meeting and move over after
yes.
this.
One last point, just so you double check when you have time. I've gone on the web myself, and the information about Safety Surge number 5 is up to date on the website.
That's the Wednesday one.
That's the one from Wednesday, yes.
Okay. It wasn't there this morning.
I got you. That's all right.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, motion to...
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
This is B.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to share with the committee that Brian Miller wanted to thank members for their thoughts and prayers. He said that he is listening to the speaker device and he hears everyone and their comments and so forth, and he wanted to say hello and he should see everyone soon, hopefully. So I just wanted to share that information.
Thank you. Move to adjourn.
No.
Okay, Mr. Rush, there's not one to adjourn. What would you like to do?
Lika wants to discuss something that she brought up, and it's really a bus rail. Oh, Metro Access, it's a little fun. I don't
want her
to get lost.
Oh, it's not going to get lost. That's what I said. That would be the first item that we did. That's for giving our 10 minutes over to Metro Access, and that is going to be discussed.
So let's adjourn.
Yes, so do we have a motion to adjourn? No, we don't have a motion yet. You can make a motion for us.
Yes, I don't know
what to do with the... Second. All in favor? Opposed? Staying? Okay. We're in our Metro Access as soon as we get on speaker.